Welcome to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We hope the following program will challenge you and encourage you in your faith journey.
We hope to grow my husband's business enough that we can provide jobs for the people around us and that we can work there together.
We currently have two teenage daughters, and with school and work, everything is just busy. So hopefully in the future, we'll have some time to slow down.
My wife and I are older, and as I look forward to the future, I just think about our friendship and how we can foster that together.
Well, how about you? What dreams do you have about your marriage? What's your 5 to 10 year plan for the future? Today on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, we'll be hearing from one couple who faced a lot of obstacles early on in their relationship. But with careful planning and intentionality and a godly commitment to each other, they're still happily married today. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, I wonder how many husbands and wives have a long-term plan for their marriage. I don't think Gene and I did. I mean, we had the commitment, obviously, but we weren't putting 5 and 10 year plans together.
No,
that sounds exhausting.
No, we got married and thought until the end, yeah.
Well, and I think most couples don't tend to think that way. And we're simply trying to do life, manage our careers, pursue God and what He wants for us, raise a family, pay the bills, and so on. But it's intriguing to think about what God has planned for your relationship. He's written in His heart, at least, what He thinks about you and where you're going to go, how He wants you to live and love one another, where He wants you to serve together, the legacy He wants you to leave behind for future generations, such as your children. That was the impetus behind a conversation I recorded with Pastor Sean Reed and his wife, Lynette. And as you indicated, John, their marriage journey was a little convoluted at first, and it allows all of us to start there because it was tough for them, so we can identify with it. And from the outside looking in, you might have wondered if they were going to survive, if their marriage would make it. But God had a plan for the Reeds, and they tapped into that plan, and I believe they have a lot of good insights and encouragement for all of us who want to have committed and meaningful marriages.
Yeah, and this conversation was recorded before a live audience at the Broadmoor Hotel here in Colorado. And Jim, you hosted a marriage conference for couples. Somehow I missed out on all the fun.
Yeah, you need to get the memo.
The Reeds have been our guests before. Sean serves as the teaching pastor at Open Door Church in North Carolina, and Lynette is part of the leadership team at XO Marriage. Together, they've written a book called Marriage in Transition, Creating Connection Through Uncontrollable Change. Learn more about our guests and the book when you stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And here's how the conversation with Sean and Lynette Reed began on today's episode of Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Sean, let me start with you. Your love story. You and I have so many things in common in terms of single parent childhood, yep, and difficulty growing up and things like that. Speak to even the dream of having a family, like when you were growing up. Were you going, I can't wait to get married and mess this up like my mom and dad?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's really interesting that we're going back to the past. I did something recently. Lynette and I, we just celebrated 25 years.
That's great. Yay!
Yeah.
We still like one another.
And you still like one another.
We still like one
another. We do. And so what we did a vow renewal. And before we did it, so our kids were the wedding party. And before we did it, I actually wrote out my story from the very beginning, as far back as I can remember. And then I read it off to my kids, like every detail.
That's fantastic.
All the juicy details, everything that happened. And one of the things, when we went back, it was amazing to see, like, my family, my father and mother, they were never married. Great people, love my parents. They separated when I was about 5. And when they separated, I ended up living with my mom for the majority of the years. There were a couple of stints when I was being a knucklehead, you know, and all of a sudden I was getting bad grades in school. My mom said, you're going to live with your dad. And so, you know,
dad's going to straighten you out.
Yeah. And he did, you know, amazingly enough, just his authority, his presence, you know, the power of a father, just his look was enough to set me straight. I think in my whole life, dad only, you know, put a belt to my butt, you know, 3 times. That was all it took. You know,
that means you're very bright.
You know, yeah. I was the youngest of 5 at that time. Yeah, so it was like I saw this one get beat, that one get beat. this one, I'm not doing it, you know? So all that being said, when I moved back in with my mom, after a while, I began to see the disintegration basically of relationships around my uncles, aunts, my brothers and sisters. None of them were married. Mm. And so we didn't. I didn't have an example of what it looked like to say this is a godly marriage. This is what a great husband, you know, should do. What I learned was what I was missing. Hmm. And so it was not necessarily what was done to me. It was the absence of things that should have been given to me.
Yeah.
And so I learned from absence. And so a lot of what I desired to give was something that I wish that I'd had in a two-parent home, in a loving, nurturing environment, in a safe place. So my lingo would be this. I grew up in the hood in St. Louis. If y'all don't know what the hood is, it's the ghetto. And so we had some rough growing up. Gangs.
You know, St. Louis at that time was one of the worst in the country, if I recall.
Oh, man, it was rough. Yeah. You know, gangs went nuts. You know,
I mean, I was in Compton, and I thought, at least I'm not in St. Louis.
You know, we were trying to be. Okay, we were trying to make our mark, man.
Apparently, there was a competition.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people, I mean, literally, there were, you know, people getting killed all around us, a lot of gangs, everything, you know, all the things. So all of a sudden, one of my cousins reaches out to me and says, I want you to sing, you know, in a choir. And I'm like, okay, I sing in choirs for girls. So I'm a singer, but I went to choir practice for the girls. I didn't go for Jesus. It had nothing to do
with
it.
Your honesty is breathtaking.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, I didn't know him. I didn't know God. We had visited church, but I didn't really grow up, you know, studying the Bible and all this other stuff. So it's like God is pulling me in with music. And I get there, and I'm sitting in a choir stand, and all of a sudden this song, I can't remember the song, but the words got me. So I'm sitting in the top of the choir stand because I sat in the back because that's where the goofy people sit. So I'm sitting in the back and I'm clowning out. And all of a sudden, we're in the middle of rehearsal and I get so convicted by this song. And it blew my mind. So I go down to the front afterwards because I'm trying not to cry in the choir.
In front of the girls?
In front of the girls. Yeah. Or the guys. I mean,
it's not a good look.
You know, I'm a man, you know. And so, you know, I can't be crying in the choir practice. So I go down to the choir director, who was a pastor. Long story short, he tells me, he's like, hey, you should read the Bible. I'm like, where do I start? He's like, just go home and read the Bible. I was like, okay. So I go home and I'm looking for a Bible. We had one of the Bibles placed by the Gideons. Y'all know what I'm talking about? So I still don't know who those people are, but I just knew it was like the little hotel Bible, right? So yeah. I get the Bible in and I open this thing up and I'm trying to understand it. So I turn to James. So it's James' first chapter.
That was good.
It's like, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptation, knowing that the triangle of your faith, all that stuff. But it was the King James Version. So I was like, what does this mean?
Yeah. Well, at least you weren't in Leviticus.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That would have been bad. Bad start for me. I call him up and he explains it to me. I'm fascinated. I'm like, this is the Bible. All of a sudden, I finally get to the part where Jesus is being crucified, right? So I'm just reading this thing. I really don't have a compass, no guide, no Bible studies or anything. So I open the thing up and I'm reading. In the part where Jesus is being crucified, I'm a visionary learner. So I'm not saying I saw Jesus, but I'm sitting there and I'm reading and I'm imagining the crucifixion. And I'm imagining this person being crucified on the cross and all these things. And then all of a sudden it hits me. There was like this moment where my face was superimposed on his face.
Wow.
And it was like, wait, I get it. And then I thought about my own sinfulness and the darkness that was in my heart and all the pain that I had gone through, survived. And I realized that he loved me enough to keep me, enough to pursue me, chase me, track me down, get my attention, and enough to pull me out of it. Huh. That was when I first knew love, unconditional.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 15.
15.
And then we met when I was 16.
Now, hang on. I want Lynette to talk about that.
Go for it.
I want to hear your version of the love story. So you meet, you're 15, 16?
We're 15, 16 years old. So like he hinted to, in St. Louis back in the day, the thing to do if you were young and if you were a believer was to sing in a gospel choir. So I was in a choir as well. And
but not looking for boys.
No, I was all about Jesus.
Yes.
My heart and my eyes were fixed on him.
Until I came in the picture.
So, that's the problem with boys and girls.
So the choir I was in needed a place to rehearse 1 week. And so the director of that choir reached out to the church he was attending, and he was the one that actually opened up the church doors for us to come in.
Oh.
So here's the thing. Sean, when I met Sean at 16 years old, he already had a full beard. So I thought, I'm not even going to lie, I thought this man was 30 years old. And me at 16... I look young now, so just imagine how young I look at 16 years old. I
was perpetual like, 12.
Yeah.
Perpetual
12. I was like, I'm not touching that. You know, I'm not getting in trouble.
Once you figure out you're the same age, what happened? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what happened.
So we actually saw one another in a mall, kind of like a couple of weeks after that. We saw one another in the mall. He was around some younger guys, and I was like, oh, he's mentoring. That's great. I remember him. And then a couple weeks later, I saw him at a skating rink, a gospel skate night. And that's when I realized, oh, he's 16.
Yeah.
And so we talked, and we just had so much in common.
We talked for 3 hours that
night. Yeah, we talked for 3 hours.
Very nice of you, Sean, to continue that relationship after that head slap.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you looked 30.
Yeah, and it was just like, oh, thank you. And what was amazing, though, ironically, her mom was a beautician, and she had done my mom's hair and my sister's hair, but I didn't know it. So she, come to find out, my mom would always get her hair done on Saturdays, and she would drag me along with her to the salon, and she was also up there. Yeah. So I had been in her presence and didn't know it since I was a little kid.
Age,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
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 That sounds like a God thing.
I think so.
I think so, yeah.
So absolutely. There you are, but you're kind of bumbling along like all of us 16-year-olds at that time, and 17, and were you in the same grade in school?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So we were in the same age, same grade, different schools.
Different schools,
right.
Okay.
He stalked me.
Make sure we edit that.
But because what he was just saying with his story, his origin story, and not really understanding love and honesty, it was really hard for him to take me for face value.
Yeah.
It was really
I didn't
hard
trust
for
that
him.
She was as clean and nice and good as she was.
So he would leave his school early to catch me after my school to see if I was like, being authentic.
I had to better, y'all.
Yeah.
If it was, I had to do the credit check. If I was going to make this investment, you know.
Are you sure it had nothing to do with algebra as your last class that day?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
okay,
not.
Good. So you weren't ditching class. Yeah. You were going to check her out.
Yeah, so we did that. And then all of a sudden, we started hanging around each other a whole lot.
A little too much.
We started talking about marriage. Even though we were in high school, we knew we were both at a point to where it's like, hey, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it. We weren't dating to kind of play around. We were, you know, we're going to live this life. But then we added a little fuel to the fire because we got so close. You know what I'm saying? Spring break happened. And then she got pregnant.
Yeah.
And so she's pregnant in high school. And that accelerated the question, you know, for us. It was just kind of like, well, do you see everything in me that you desire to see in a husband? And she said, yeah. And then she asked me the same question. I said, absolutely.
It was a very mature conversation.
Yeah.
Very.
So it wasn't a romantic proposal, but it was a very clear conversation that we had with one another. And we made the decision to go ahead and get married.
Let me ask you this question, because so often, especially parents of 18, 19, 20-year-olds, you know, you might think as a parent, and maybe your parents thought this too, what a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But here you are 25 years later writing marriage books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
What's the best way for us to respond is my question. That's great, instead of you're making a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have so many thoughts on it. On the one hand, yes, we did get that. My father was very clear, you're making one of the biggest mistakes of your life.
Wow.
And to a degree, he was right in that I wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, spiritually, there was a level of maturity. We were ready, but then we weren't. I wasn't economically, you know, in a place of strength. And there was still a lot of self-discovery that we still needed along the way. However, and this is going to sound a little cheesy, but there were two things that I think helped Lynette and I make it. Number one, how our parents raised us. Both of our parents, old school, solid, sound wisdom. They all were hard workers, and they had great character. That rubbed off on both of us.
Huh.
If they weren't the great examples that they were, and had we not seen what it took to be great contributors to society and to one another, then I would say, yeah, that would have been to our detriment to get married. However, in spite of the fact that we didn't have a whole lot, we did have God and we did have their example. And to me, God made the difference in the middle of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were humble enough to still listen and learn and grow. So what I would have said was, if my dad was shaky back then, if I could redo it, what I would have love for him to have said was, here's why I don't think you're ready, and here's a pathway that I would love for you guys to walk out before you get married.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do it, how about you try these three things?
Yeah.
That's good.
Lynette, let me ask you, because you obviously knew Sean's background, where he was coming from. You were in a more stable situation, I think.
I was, yeah.
So did that cause you any concern? Did your mom pull you aside and say, honey, you could do better?
Well, my dad, I was a daddy's girl.
Okay.
A two-parent home. Family was the core, you know. Friday night family, pizza night, movie night, Sunday dinners. Grew up in church, so I had a nucleus that was very stable. So my dad, when I told my dad I was pregnant, he did not say a word. He got up and just walked out of the house. And I almost wish he would have yelled at me, right? I almost wanted the yelling or the disbelief, but he just got up, walked out. And I think he was gone for like 2 hours.
Yeah, wow.
My mom couldn't reach him. He was just gone. But what he did was he came back and he said, you know, I love you. This doesn't change my perspective of you. If you're going to do it, how can we help? And for me, that was what I grew up with all along. And so it was the same. He embraced me. He told me there were going to be challenges. He actually said, now, if he lay a hand on you, you can always come back home.
Mm.
And I said, I know. I'll come back for sure. But he allowed me to make my decision. But he was there with me. My parents were there every step of the way.
Yeah.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
Hey, this is Dr. Greg Smalley with Focus on the Family. If you're married, you know it takes work for two lives to become one. Your wins and losses are often tied to who you are and how you work together. The Focus on the Family Marriage Assessment provides a combined report that considers your individual strengths, areas of growth, and how unique people like you can better come together. To get started on your marriage assessment, visit marriagestrengths.com. That's marriagestrengths.com.
It can be challenging to inspire your community to see life the way God sees it. So what's the solution? Well, on June 15th, Focus on the Family is hosting Sea Life 24. And no matter where you are or who you are, you can be a part of this free event with speakers like Ben and Kirsten Watson and real stories about choosing life. Sea Life 24 will inspire you to translate your faith into action. Register today at sealife24.org.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
Describe that first year of marriage, what you were coping with in your maturity.
So we graduated high school in June. Mm-hmm. We got married September 5th.
Mm-hmm.
We had our first child December 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved into our first place probably a month or two after that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the place that we moved into, it was a shotgun apartment.
You guys know what a shotgun apartment is?
No.
I mean,
okay.
You, you stand at the front door and you can see all the way to the back door. The
you
bedroom,
can see every room.
The kitchen, the bathroom, the exit.
And I called that a home.
I mean, it was. It was our first spot.
It had one AC unit that was in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was on, it spit out water.
Yeah.
And so we would just kind of lay underneath it as the water was just spitting out on us. Yeah.
It's kind of disgusting when you think about it later on. But I mean, it was what we had, and we made it work, right? So that's how we started off. And I mean, literally, we were learning everything on the fly. How to manage finance, how to talk to one another, how to raise a kid. Like, everything was all dumped on at one time.
Really pushing back our growth in the sense of I had to focus on being a mom. I had to focus on how to be a wife.
Right.
So as far as what I wanted and who I wanted to be, you know, in that 20-ish, you know, age range, that was just pushed back.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I forgot about the kids.
Yep.
So we had 3 kids within 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So by 23, you have 3 kids, or 22.
Yeah. But even during that time, we had dealt with health issues. We had dealt with miscarriage.
Yep.
We had dealt with my dad's death, passing away. We had dealt with just transitioning and moving from St. Louis to Texas. Mm-hmm. And so in that 5 years of marriage, we had gone through so much.
Yeah, we grew up quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, in the book, you talk about counseling younger couples now that you've had more experience under your belt, mm-hmm. and you tell them not to kind of have rose-colored glasses on, that mm-hmm. early marriage is going to be tough. It's a roller coaster.
Yes.
Get ready.
Yes.
Do they look at you like, oh, you don't know how much in love we are?
Yes.
That won't be our story.
Oh, man, let me tell you.
Right,
it's so many of them that are just like, but not us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, as long as you're breathing, it will be you. it's going to happen. And so you can be in love through it all, and that's great.
Yeah.
But life has a way of throwing curveballs at you. And in that process, though, there are ways that we can stay united as a couple no matter what comes at us, no matter what comes our way. Through all of the marriage transitions, there's a way for us to ground ourselves in a position to where her heart is always open to my heart, and my heart is always open to her heart.
Yeah.
Usually the circumstances of life, they pull at us in ways to where when we went through, for instance, the miscarriage, that was our third pregnancy. We were pregnant. She was pregnant with twins. And so at that point, you know, here we went from, you know, coming up with names for 2 kids and imagining, oh, man, you prepare your mind. Yeah. And all of a sudden, obviously, the miscarriage happens. And then the rest of that pregnancy was, you know, she was on bed rest and, you know, went through difficulty there while she was in the hospital and going through passing out. I mean, it was a lot that happened with that pregnancy. Our daughter, who at that time was about 1.5 years, she goes in the hospital and she can't breathe.
Yeah.
And it was a freaky moment.
Yeah.
And so what she was experiencing in that moment, carrying a child with a very dangerous pregnancy at that point, and what I was experiencing from the outside is 2 totally different things. And it's very seldom do you get a husband and a wife that are able to see into the other person's perspective of the experience and empathize with them.
Mm.
To where it's not just about your own perspective, but every problem we face, there's a shared dynamic of how do I hold your heart in my hand while we go through a good time together or while we're going through a crisis together? Do I see your perspective? Am I empathetic? Am I compassionate towards your experience of the same dilemma?
Yeah.
And so she ends up going into labor while our daughter's in the hospital at the same time.
Different hospital.
Different hospitals. Yeah.
She goes and it's how many months premature?
She was a month premature. Yeah. So she was tiny.
Yeah. So she went in and literally she did 2 pushes and the baby comes out.
The doctor had to catch her.
Yeah.
He literally said, push, and then push again. And on the second push, she came out. He called the doctor, and then the doctor turned around and had to catch.
And she, yeah, literally, he was putting on gloves. I said, bro.
She's coming out.
Yeah. So she gets delivered. We have our little precious baby. And then on the flip side, our youngest, come to find out, her adenoids were swollen. She ended up having to have a surgery at, 1.5 years to get those removed. So we're freaking out about that. And yet through it all, we're trusting God in this process. In the aftermath of it, though, we're like surviving at that point.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
We're surviving. We're not connected.
Yeah.
This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and we've been listening to a conversation that Jim had with Sean and Lynette Reed about their roller coaster experience in marriage, and how, despite all the obstacles they faced, God was in that journey with them, guiding their lives toward His purpose and His plan.
Yeah, we mentioned at the beginning that this program was recorded before a live audience of Focus Friends at a marriage conference here in Colorado Springs. And I have to say, we were all astonished and amazed by what the Reeds were experiencing when they got married and how they had the commitment not only to each other, but also to God, seeking His help to keep their relationship going. The word that comes to my mind is tenacity. And I think we all need more of that in our marriages today to push through and link arms together as a husband and wife so we can show the world what Christian marriage looks like today. And sometimes that's tough. You run out of juice, you run out of fuel. But what a great illustration about how to stay focused on the Lord. We want to help you get there in your relationship. That's why I'm recommending the Reeds book to you, Marriage in Transition, Creating Connection Through Uncontrollable Change. And we can send that to you when you make a monthly pledge of any amount to Focus on the Family, which is our way of saying thanks for being part of the ministry and helping to rescue other marriages today.
Yeah, and when you say any amount, Jim, no amount is too small. Those monthly gifts of $10 or $15 or $20 really add up. They go a long way to help strengthen our budget and help us serve and encourage married couples looking for help. Recent survey results showed that almost 600,000 husbands and wives were able to build stronger marriages in the past 12 months because of the help that Focus on the Family offers.
I love that. Every year we survey the constituents that connect with us and ask us for help, and we go back to them and ask them how helpful were we, and that is a great number. You can be a part of that marriage-building team when you make that monthly pledge today. Right now, we're trying to recruit families and individuals who will support this ministry all year long, and I hope you'll prayerfully consider being a part of the ministry team here. And if a monthly pledge is more than you can afford, we get it. We know the economy. A one-time gift is equally helpful. So we just thank you ahead of time for your generosity.
Yeah, make a gift today and request your copy of the Reeds book, Marriage in Transition, when you call 800, the letter A, and the word family, 800-232-6459, or donate online at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. We'll hear more from the Reeds next time as they describe the vital importance of having a vision for your marriage. And on behalf of the entire team, thanks for joining us for this episode of Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ. You're listening to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We'll take a quick break and then return with the second half of this program for your family. Stay tuned.
Your marriage can be redeemed, even if the fights seem constant, even if there's been an affair, even if you haven't felt close in years. No matter how deep the wounds are, you can take a step toward healing them with a Hope Restored Marriage Intensive. Our biblically based counseling will help you find the root of your problems and face challenges together. We'll talk with you, pray with you, and help you find out which program will work best. Call us at 1-866-875-2915.
And I think sometimes we have like spiritual amnesia. We forget about the goodness of God when we're going through some of the darkest times. But how many times does God have to prove over again that He's a prayer answering God? How many times did God show you His favor, give you a miracle, give you a breakthrough? At some point, we've been walking with God long enough to know that He's God of the valley and that He's our shepherd and we lack no good thing. He is with us. He never leaves us and never forsakes us.
Well, that's a profound statement from Pastor Sean Reed as he reminds husbands and wives that God is always present with us in the good times and in the difficult times. We can really trust Him to guide us in the right path for our marriage. Welcome to another edition of Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. We're returning to a conversation we shared last time with Sean and his wife, Lynette, and they were participating in a marriage conference here in Colorado Springs. We wanted to bring you more of their insights today.
John, this conversation we shared last time from Sean and Lynette was awesome. I think you could hear it in that opening clip. Man, just powerful truth.
Mm-hmm.
They were very open and vulnerable about some early challenges they had in their relationship. I think a lot of us are going to be able to relate to those things. For example, they began dating as teenagers and got pregnant before graduating from high school. When Sean and Lynette decided to get married, many people, including family members, thought they were making a huge mistake. And boy, I can only imagine if I were her dad, I would be saying that. Wait a minute. Sean admitted that he didn't have good role models for being a husband and father because he grew up in a broken home where his parents never married. And this young couple struggled to survive financially and raise a family. And there were unexpected issues like miscarriage and health problems along the way. But through it all, I love the "but through it all" part, the Reeds had their faith in God to guide them and ground them, and we'll hear a lot more about that today. If you missed the program last time, contact us about getting an audio copy of that, or you can review the previous episode on YouTube, or best of all, get our broadcast app so you can access all the great radio and podcast content like this anytime.
Yeah, and we mentioned this last time. The Reeds have written a book that captures a great deal of their story. It's called Marriage in Transition, Creating Connection Through Uncontrollable Change. We've got copies of that here. Just call 800, the letter A in the word family, or stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And now part two of the conversation with Sean and Lynette Reed on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
When you look at the elements of what kept you together, kept you moving forward, kept you strong in this transition, how would you describe those? What are the adjectives? I mean, love is obviously there. Mm-hmm. What else is there? Commitment, loyalty, and what's going on? Because this is the kind of pressure that breaks a couple apart.
Mm-hmm. I would say, and I know this is going to sound really basic, but it was really my faithfulness and commitment to the Lord that kept me.
Explain that so those that may not have that can understand
sure.
it.
So for me, again, because the way I grew up, having a relationship with Jesus was the foundation of everything. He was the center of every decision that I made as a young adult or even as a child. So when we decided to get married, the reason why it was such a mature conversation and not as romantic was because we knew the stakes were high. We knew that everything was stacked against us. And so for me, the only thing that I had to go off on was, God, I really do love this person. And I can serve them the way that they are right now. And if you are with me, I know we'll be okay.
Wow.
And so that is my, honestly, that is my foundation even to today. And so when we ran into those times of transitions and trouble, that became my foundation and my standard.
Yeah.
It was, I know I'm being shaken right now, but I know I will not be uprooted.
Yeah.
I know that I'm going through a tough time right now, and both of my babies' lives
right.
are in the balance. But if you are for me and you've been walking with me this
right.
whole time, then whatever happens, whatever may come, I know you're going to be with me and you're going to get me through it.
Yeah.
And it's almost saying when things are going chaotic, when things aren't going well, to pull everything aside, move everything out of the way. The only person I really had to count on was Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good place to go.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, kind of amazed at your wisdom to be able to do that at such a young age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys had a Denny's restaurant experience.
Yeah.
Where you mapped out on a napkin, I think, your life goals.
We
yep.
did.
Yep. I wish we still had it to this day.
Oh, it would be great.
That would be great.
Describe that environment. What age are you now going, okay, we need a plan?
We
pull out a napkin and start drafting a plan.
So when that happened, no, we were in St. Louis at the time.
It was pretty
hard. No. So we were about 20 when this happened. And we almost were about to have Brittany.
Okay.
This is kind of that transitional phase. And what happened was Lynette and I, as we were kind of in that season of first jobs, first apartment, you know, but living in the hood, going through, you know, some tension between us, but at the same time still watching a lot of our friends and family fall apart.
Yeah.
Something within us said, okay, What's going to be the difference maker? How will we overcome? What's going to be different about us? And on that day, we realized that we didn't want to settle for the routine of kind of whatever society is handing to us as the norm for a husband and a wife.
Yeah, we were never the couple that wanted just the basic. Even just out of life, as individuals, that's one of the things that drew us towards one another, is we always wanted to do something beyond, bigger, have a higher expectation.
Yeah. Now, in that context, as Christians, I mean, was it the bigger house, or was that a byproduct? Or was it more altruistic? Was it a bigger, it was, bigger in the context of what can I do for you, Lord?
Yes, it was that. It was what can I do for you, Lord? And when we considered the legacy we wanted to leave with our children, that's when we began to dream about what type of house, what kind of quality land ownership. When we looked at the Bible and we compared every patriarch, matriarch, God gave them land. So in our minds, we were thinking to ourselves, well, that's the only real estate. So let's get something that's real. And so we were dreaming not just of a big house, great car, all of those things, because those things will come and go. It was more so about what is the legacy that we will pass down? What can be inherited by the next generation? When you think of Sean and Lynette, how will we be remembered when we're gone? So that was in us at 18.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking of that 3 to 5 year plan, basically off that napkin. Yep. A lot of couples are going, especially in their 20s, are going, I don't got time to do that. I mean, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. We're raising our one child, our two children. Yep. What's the importance of doing that, to actually bite the bullet and do it?
Listen, where, you know, Proverbs tells us where there's no vision, the people perish. And so the idea is, when I think of Lynette and I together, this is us being bound together. So long as we're together, we're seeing the same vision, we're seeing the same destination and moving on a plan towards that same place. Nothing can separate us. And so a vision is that thing that binds us together. And so where you don't have foresight of where you're going, how can two walk together lest they be agreed? So you're walking in different directions, and then we're surprised when all of a sudden the marriages fall apart and people call it irreconcilable differences. I don't think it's irreconcilable differences. I think that there was never a reconciled vision.
Yeah. And so some of the things we started writing down on that napkin, I know for me, the first thing that I thought about was values and what do I value in life?
Yep.
And how do I want to create the culture of that value in my home? So this was something simple. We value health, right? And so as we started thinking, hey, if we value health and we want a long and healthy life, then I can't be eating at McDonald's. And then we sat there and we're like, well, we probably shouldn't be eating here at Denny's either.
Yeah.
I think it's a little better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was small things like that that we started questioning what was in your heart. What do you want to see? And then it led to, well, how can we change the culture in our home to reflect the values in our heart?
Wow. So. The intentionality is what's catching me. And again, just the ability to be that intentional about what you want to do as a couple, as a family. I don't know why we miss it generally.
Well, I think genuinely for Lynette and I, we love StrengthsFinders. It's a personality test, and it really, it's a phenomenal tool, a resource.
StrengthsFinders.
Yeah. Okay. You can go to gallups.com and take the test and you get your top five. Both Lynette and I have in our top five belief as a strength. And the idea behind belief is that we share this thought that everything that we do is connected to a greater purpose. So I genuinely believe, and I don't know how many of y'all believe it, but I genuinely believe one day I'm going to see God face to face. Right. And I know that I'm making it in not because of my good works, but I do believe that I will be held accountable for the good work that he called me to. If God looks at the span of my life and he's like, dude, you can do all of this and you can leave this kind of a legacy. And I get to the end of, you know, the life that I've lived, and I left 50% of what I could have contributed to this world in the tank because I was sitting on the couch watching a game. You know, I was wasting my time. And so, like, when I think about,
you know, it's Saturday and there's some college football coming up.
I mean, and like, there's nothing wrong with that, so long as that's your Sabbath day and the rest of the weeks you were working, right? You know, and so I just, I think about how many of my family and friends, I love them. And they have such great potential. Yeah. But I've watched them fall apart physically, some of them mentally. Mm-hmm. And a large part of it was because they so focused on the now or couldn't move on past their past.
Yeah.
And they didn't build for their future. And in doing so, they were trapped in a state of misery. Yeah. And so I believe that there's a sense of joy and fulfillment when you're doing what God has called and created you to do. And it doesn't matter what your age or stage in life, right? As long as you suck and win, God has purpose for you. And so you have to dream forward and you have to have a vision and a plan as to what you're putting your hands to together as a couple.
Yeah. That is really good. I mean, that in a nutshell is the way we should pursue life.
Absolutely.
Right? In the book, you mention one of the greatest dysfunctions. This may have been your podcast. One of the greatest dysfunctions in marriage today is the failure to see each other through the lens of grace. Mm-hmm. We've touched on that, but I want to come back to it.
Okay.
That idea of grace. Do you know who Gene is married to? For her to extend that grace is a really high order.
Yeah.
You get the idea. I flipped that for you. Is that good?
Well, one of the keys that we found is that my goal, my heart, and it took me a while to do this, because when I'm in my feelings, when I'm in my own pity party, it's about what Lynette didn't do for me. It's about how she didn't do what I asked her to do. And I finger point, right? Mm-hmm. But Jesus gives us a warning about that when he talks about, you know, you're complaining about the speck in your spouse's eye while you have a log in your own. So there's this level of humility that comes. And how do you get to that level of humility to where you begin to see your spouse through a lens of grace? Mm-hmm. And part of it is, it goes back to when I was saved and I had that vision of what Jesus did on my behalf, and I couldn't earn it. And a lot of us don't want to give the best of ourselves to our spouse until they earn it. Mm. We don't give them the best of ourselves until we see their best hand put forward, their best foot put forward. And it's just like, but that's not what we do with Jesus. He gives us a relationship before we ever earned it. He maintains the relationship with us, even though we don't deserve it. So the goal for me is to fight for the gold in my wife, even when I don't see it all the time. I have to look at her and say, how does God see Lynette right now? And when he looks at Lynette, that's his daughter. She's robed in white. She's pure and holy in his sight. He literally calls her the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. His word would say that she's the apple of his eye, meaning that God's pupil, so to speak, would have her in it. He can't open his eyeball without seeing my wife. Mm. And when he sees her, he favors her. I don't want to mess up with God's daughter. You hear me? So that challenges me to look at her, not through the lens of her failures, but to look at her through the lens of the Lord. And to say, okay, she's robed in righteousness. Let me treat her how a king's daughter should be treated. Even though sometimes she's at her worst, she's not giving me her best. The truth is, she's been that for me and then some. And she deserves the best, even when she may be at her worst.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
Are you a pastor? Then you know ministry is full of challenges. But those challenges sometimes come from lies that you believe about your role and expectations of you. As a pastor, you and your spouse need to be refreshed and encouraged. And that's why Focus on the Family presents the Focused Pastor Couples Conference. Join us as we hear from Paul David Tripp, Dr. Greg Smalley, Ted Cunningham, and more. Mark your calendar to join us on October 28th through 30th right here at Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs. Visit thefocusedpastor.com/refresh for more details.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
Grit. Oh, this is another one I love. Dude. I'm kind of a John Wayne fan, sorry. But, mm-hmm. you know, that the conjuring up of an image, it's like grit.
True grit.
Okay. But in a spiritual context, I mean, the truest of grit is having grit within your relationship with the Lord. So what does that mean in marriage? What does that look like to have grit?
Oh, man. There's so much I want to say to this subject. First off, scriptures say, he that faints in the day of adversity, his strength is small. That's a powerful statement.
Mm.
That when we go through, and Jesus tells us that we will go through difficult times, that we need to have our house built on the rock. the storm is coming. When Jesus says that if you build on his word and you follow his word, you'll be able to stand when the winds come, when the waves come, when the flood comes in. A storm is coming. And for some of us, some of y'all in this room, some of y'all listening, it's been back to back. It's been wave after wave, one transition after another, another, you know, set of bad news after another. Grit is the ability to say, I got your back. Do you have my back? Mm-hmm. We're going to stand through this, and come hell or high water, we're going to stand on the word of God, and I will support you, and I want you to support me. But we will not quit on one another, and we're not going to quit on God.
Yeah.
Because he was there for us, and you've been there for me, and I will not forget it. Mm. And I think sometimes we have like spiritual amnesia. We forget about the goodness of God when we're going through some of the darkest times. But how many times does God have to prove over again that he's a prayer answering God? Mm. How many times did God show you his favor, give you a miracle, give you a breakthrough? At some point, we've been walking with God long enough to know that he's God of the valley and that he's our shepherd and we lack no good thing. He is with us. He never leaves us and never forsakes us. One of the thoughts that I have on grit, especially with couples, is this, and I have so many thoughts in my head. When God tells us, when he created us, Adam and Eve, he said to Adam, hey, it's not good for you to be alone. The word good in Hebrew is tov. So when he says it's not good, it's not tov for you to be alone. Tov means functioning according to your design.
Hmm.
So he's saying to every human being, you were created to function in partnership and connection to other people. But you also have to remember that they were created in the cool of the garden with the breath of God, the Almighty. So it's telling us two things. You were never meant to operate as a human being outside of the presence of God and without the presence of another person. You need both the presence of God and you need the connection to another person in your life. So when we talk about grit, grit is saying, God, no matter what I see with my eyes, I will trust you as my greatest treasure. And then grit says, secondly, I know I can't do this next season of my life alone. I will not exclude my number one partner in going through whatever problem I face by pointing my fingers at them, by casting blame on them, by casting them out from my presence. I won't do what Adam and Eve did and ended up driven from the presence of God and also having a wedge divided yeah. between one another.
Mm. I like to define grit as staying power.
Mm.
It's the power to stay.
Preach it.
Whether it's in good times, bad times, I have the power to flat foot stand there and just take it and move forward.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So Lynette, how are you going to
Yeah. So for me, I wish every married person or, you know, even every single, just even going back to where you're single, I wish people knew the importance of generational legacy.
Yes.
And I wish they understood that our God thinks generationally. He doesn't just think in the moment. And when you come together, husband and wife comes together, there is a goal, there's a promise, there's a purpose that is bigger than the moment that you're going through.
Yes.
And if you can just stay put just a little bit longer, if you can dream, even in the midst of your chaos, if you can dream about the future, if you could look at your child who has taken your last nerve, but just imagine what God's blessing on top of that child, God's anointing on that child, what he could do for them in the future, what he can do through them in the future. If we could, through every situation, every trouble, if we can just slap God's perspective on it, then I think we'll be able to witness and participate in those moments where God wants to do amazing things.
Yeah.
But because we're short-sighted, and because we only think about the moment, and because we are selfish, then we just kind of opt out of God's blessing. And it is so disheartening, and it is so disappointing. And so what I would love to do is to be able to change the mindset of people when they get married or if they're thinking about marriage, I want to say keep in mind that God has generational blessing on top of you.
Yes.
And he wants to bless your children's children's children. Mm-hmm. And if you can just hold out, if you can just wait, if you can just stick it out a little longer, you'll begin to walk through it.
Oh, that is perfect. How beautiful. It really does go back to that garden thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That, you know, we're walking with the Lord when we're walking like that.
Yeah.
And when we're not, we're outside of his you know, range.
Yeah.
So. And his whole goal was so that we would be fruitful and multiply. And I don't think that fruitful and multiplication was just about procreation. It was that we were supposed to rule and subdue.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, okay, let me say this. This is
a great last question.
Yeah. So think about it. God created Adam and Eve in his image, right? Imago Dei. So the idea is they're made in his image and likeness. One of the ways that I like to phrase Adam and Eve, they are a representation of God. Hmm. They are his ambassadors in the earth. You know what an ambassador does. They represent another nation, another country, or the home country on foreign soil. And so God was like, hey, I have my soil. I rule the heavens. I want a representation of myself to rule and reign on the earth. Earth is our home.
Yeah.
God, he's got his space. He created a place for us. That's why even in Revelations, what do we get? At the end of the day, you got life forever with God, but we're not stuck in heaven. You get a new heaven and earth. Yeah. We're going to live on earth forever. And so the idea is he wants us to rule and reign on the earth. And what is the institution that he uses to host his presence and his power?
Marriage.
Uh-huh. And it is still the way when he has a husband and a wife that are walking in unity with his voice and his presence, God takes his image and he stamps it in the earth. And for every family that walks in his presence and power, he stamps his image in that neighborhood. He stamps his image on that business. He stamps his image on those kids so that everywhere your family goes, when they think of your name and when they see your legacy, they see the image and likeness and the glory of God.
That is good.
That was really good.
That's it right there.
Well, that's how we finished this two-part conversation with Pastor Sean Reed and his wife, Lynette, on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. What a powerful conclusion, Jim, from Sean.
It really was, and I couldn't agree with him anymore. I mean, we need to have a bigger perspective about marriage today. It's not just about you and your spouse. There's so much more at stake. It's about your witness for the Lord before the world. And people are watching your marriage. They're watching all of our marriages. Your kids are watching, most importantly. Your friends, your neighbors, they're watching too. And they want to see if the faith you profess in Jesus Christ is real. And believe me, I get it. Sometimes we feel weak and we are not as strong as we need to be, but we need to work toward being stronger. And that's what this program is about today. Here at Focus on the Family, we want you to become an effective witness for Christ when you're talking and when you're not talking, right? Yeah. And that's why we're sharing this program today and pointing you to resources like the Reed's book, Marriage in Transition, Creating Connection Through Uncontrollable Change. I want to put a copy of this into your hands. Make a monthly pledge of any amount to Focus, and we'll send it right out to you as our way of saying thank you for being part of the ministry. And, you know, it's a 2-for. You get a great resource and you support fixing and helping to point people to Christ in their broken marriages. I can't imagine any of the other for-profit companies doing that with the proceeds. Right,
right. And a monthly pledge really does help us meet the needs of couples and families all year long. Hundreds of thousands of men and women contact Focus on the Family every year for help in marriage preparation or to work through a crisis in their relationship or maybe to help another couple they know who need to have a stronger, healthier marriage.
Well, and that's why we're inviting you to join our Friends of Focus on the Family team. We have about 50,000 people monthly that support, but, you know, it covers a portion of the ministry, and we want to keep growing that very effective and important group within Focus on the Family. That's how Gene and I support the ministry. It's how you and Dina support the ministry, John.
Yeah.
It's just, it evens the things out for us for planning purposes. We know the dollars that we can count on, and it really helps us. If a monthly pledge is more than you can afford right now, a one-time gift helps, obviously. This is fuel for the engine of ministry. And so it's how it gets done. God's people being, urged in their heart to send a gift to Focus so we can have a marriage saved, help an orphan child, help save a baby's life from abortion. That's what all those proceeds go to and so much more.
Yeah, we appreciate your partnership and generosity. And our number is 800-232-6400. 800, the letter A in the word family. Or you can donate and request your copy of Marriage in Transition at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And another resource we have for you is our free marriage assessment. It's an online survey, very easy to take. It enables you and your spouse to kind of get on the same page in terms of what's working well in the relationship and maybe an area or two of improvement. And all the details about that free marriage assessment are online. I'm John Fuller, and thanks for listening to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. Plan to join us next time as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.
Is your marriage holding on by a thread? For deep hurt, you need deep healing that only comes from the Lord. And you'll find it at a Focus on the Family Hope Restored Intensive in Michigan. Our licensed Christian counselors will help you and your spouse get to the root of your issues in just 3 to 5 days. And it works. 80% of the couples are still married 2 years after attending. Learn more at HopeRestored.com and talk with a trusted advisor. That's HopeRestored.com.